We check in on the top stories of the week in national politics. President Trump clarified remarks he made about Russian election meddling after backlash from both parties. The House and Senate are starting to reconcile their versions of the farm bill, and conservative Republicans in the House want to start impeachment proceedings for Deputy Attorney General Rod Rosenstein. Our question for you this week, do you think getting rid of the Deputy Attorney General Rod Rosenstein would be a good idea? Do you see signs of bias in how the Justice Department is handling the investigation into Russian campaign interference? Or do you think the probe should continue to its conclusion? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also email ideas@WPR.org. Daniel Neuhauser is a staff correspondent for the National Journal. Dan, welcome back to Central Time.
Hey, thanks for having me back.
I want to give a listen here at the White House yesterday. President Trump tried to clarify remarks that he made at a press conference with Russian President Vladimir Putin, where he appeared to accept Putin's denial of Russian meddling in the 2016 election. Here he is with that yesterday.
Let me be totally clear in saying that, and I've said this many times, I accept our intelligence community's conclusion that Russia's meddling in the 2016 election took place. Could be other people also. There's a lot of people out there.
Well, take us back through the backlash to the president's initial comments saying, hey, he heard from Director of National Intelligence Dan Coats, he heard from Vladimir Putin, he had confidence in both, and now he's sort of walking that back yesterday. What do you make of that, Dan?
Yeah, well, Republicans on the Capitol Hill, for the most part, were completely dismayed by the president's seemingly weak position standing next to Putin in Helsinki. They put out a lot of statements basically chastising or saying, you know, the president shouldn't have appeared that way and that he should confirm what his own intelligence community is saying him rather than listening to Vladimir Putin. But as far as taking any action beyond that, as far as doing anything substantive like a censure or any kind of legislation or even a House resolution affirming their support for the intelligence community, that seems to be a step too far for a congressional Republican who basically feel like they cannot they can't be on the wrong side of this Republican president for fear of backlash from the Republican base.
And the president's explanation was that he said would instead of wouldn't when he was talking about whether he thought Russia was responsible for campaign interference in 2016. Did that give an out, at least for some congressional Republicans?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, some people said, well, OK, that's good enough for me. But I think the key here is that people who were looking for an out found it, and other people remain skeptical. And then just today, the president was asked whether he thinks that Russia is still meddling, and he said no. And, of course, the intelligence community believes that they still are. And then Sarah Sanders, his press secretary, came out and said, well, he wasn't saying no to the question. He was saying no to answering the question. He didn't want to answer the question. So there continues to be these mixed messages coming from the White House. Perhaps you can chalk some of this up to the president's interesting and unique communication style. But certainly there is a lot here on Capitol Hill left to be desired.
And in that bit that we heard from yesterday, the president said he believes he agrees with the intelligence community about Russian interference. That far, he's agreeing with his intelligence community. And then he said, could be other people. There's a lot of people out there. So he left this wiggle room in some ways.
Yeah, well, he just seems very uncomfortable with changing positions. I think there's some thought that it makes him seem, you know, weak or susceptible to attacks from the press or from his own critics. And so what he has been saying, I mean, you remember famously he said it could be like some 400-pound guy sitting at a computer, which obviously there's no intelligence indicating that at all. All the intelligence indicates that this is state-sponsored Russian attacks on our election integrity. But you know, he ad-libbed that second part, basically saying, well, it could be other people, when in fact the intelligence community has been pretty clear that it's not other people.
And this all came after the president's meeting with NATO and a rocky relationship there. And then the president had said on Fox News after the Putin conversation, the issue of the country of Montenegro, one of the newer, smaller members of NATO, came up. The president expressed concern that they would be aggressive and create an incident with Russia, and it wouldn't be worth it, in effect, for the United States to come to the defense of a NATO partner. And that, from foreign policy people, has raised some eyebrows.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, this all, big picture, it appears to people here on the Hill that the president is aligning himself with autocratic-leaning, strongman people with dictatorial tendencies, and turning his back on our own allies. In another interview, he called the EU a foe, things like that. It's just not what people are used to seeing here from an American president, let alone a Republican president, when the Republican Party ostensibly tries to be, the party of peace through strength, the party of Reagan, who famously stood up to Gorbachev and Russian leaders during the Soviet era. So it's putting Republicans here on the Hill in a pretty tough position where they feel, again, beholden to Trump because he has completely captured the Republican base. They feel like there's little that they can substantively do because he doesn't listen to them anyway. But they do feel they feel in disagreement with him. They believe in NATO. They do believe that Putin has been an enemy and has been adversarial to the United States. So we'll see how this manifests going forward. But as for now, they have done very little. Republicans have done very little on the Hill other than issue a few statements to try to rebuke the president.
Talking to Dan Neuhauser, staff correspondent for the National Journal, and our weekly roundup of national news. Moving over to Congress, but on a related issue, some conservative Republicans in the U.S. House are looking, they say, to impeach Deputy Attorney General Rod Rosenstein. Who is behind this? What are their criticisms of Rosenstein?
So this is originating from the House Freedom Caucus. Famously, the group that split away from an already conservative group here because they wanted to be even more conservative, if not policy-wise, then tactically. They agree in these, tough, strong-handed tactics to try to push even their own conference further to the right. They were the same people who were behind the ultimately failed attempt to impeach IRS Commissioner John Koskinen. And now they are coming for Rod Rosenstein's head. What they've said is that Congress has been trying to compel the DOJ to release certain documents related to the Russia investigation and the investigation into the Clinton email server, things like surveillance of former Trump campaign advisor Carter Page. And so they don't feel like they're getting enough documents, and so they're floating this impeachment motion. I don't know if they're ultimately going to go through with it, but they have been as close as standing on the House floor with it. This is Representative Mark Meadows, the chairman of this group. He was standing on the House floor last Friday with this motion in his hand, ready to file it, and then he ultimately didn't. So whether some of that is for show, to try to put pressure on Rosenstein, or maybe just to get news articles out there about it, that's a thought. But maybe they ultimately will go through with this. What they have settled on this week is to write a letter to the Department of Justice Inspector General, asking them to look into the whether or not Rosenstein is agreeing with these document subpoenas. So again, we'll see exactly how far this goes. But there is not a lot of support, even among fellow Republicans, to do this. Trey Gowdy, Paul Ryan, they've been pretty happy with how Rosenstein has been handing documents over. So I don't think ultimately this would have enough support to pass, even if it did get filed.
Dan Neuhauser is with us, correspondent at the National Journal, looking at the week in national politics, and you can join in at 800-642-1123. What do you think of this idea advanced by some conservative House Republicans of impeaching the Deputy Attorney General, Rod Rosenstein, the person overseeing the Mueller probe? Do President Trump and conservative Republicans have a point when they say the Justice Department is tainted by political bias? Or do you think the probe should continue with Rosenstein overseeing it? What do you think? Is this a tactic, a stunt, or a good idea? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also email ideas at WPR.org. We continue our conversation with Dan Neuhauser from the National Journal, looking at some of the top stories in political news from around the nation. We'll go to your calls now on our question this week about the idea of impeaching the Deputy Attorney General, Rod Rosenstein. Albert is with us in Hub City. Albert, hi.
Hi.
What do you think?
I've been watching this pretty close, and Congress, the Republicans in Congress has been after everybody they can go after, and now they figure they can go after Robert with Rosenstein. I think they just want to get that. They want to end the Mueller probe because they don't want to find out the truth about what Mueller has got. And I believe the Congress, Republicans in Congress, are just as crooked as the President Trump is.
Albert, thanks a lot for the call. Dan, do you think Republicans in Congress are unanimous about the idea of wanting to put an end to the Mueller probe, as Albert's suggesting?
They're absolutely not unanimous about it. There are numerous Republicans, including the leadership, who have been unequivocal in saying that the Mueller probe should continue. But Albert is right in pointing out that Rosenstein, a vote against Rosenstein or Trump firing Rosenstein would be seen as an attack on the Mueller probe, because don't forget here, now Rosenstein is the only in charge of the Mueller probe because Attorney General Sessions recused himself of anything to do with Russia. So that puts Rosenstein as the next man up. He's the deputy attorney general. He's a career guy. He doesn't have any particular allegiances to Trump one way or the other. So to have somebody who's seen as an impartial arbiter, removed, that would open up for the position for Trump to install somebody there who would be less sympathetic to Mueller, who would not want to allow that probe to go on. And I think that would be seen as the real red line here by a lot of Republicans, including the congressional leadership. Now, again, whether that would actually lead to them doing anything, well, I can't know, because everything that has happened so far, where it seems as if the president has crossed some sort of a red line, there's been not much of a response from Congress, again, other than maybe a statement or so here and there. It would be well. Establish that would set off some sort of a constitutional crisis, and nobody wants to head in that direction.
Albert, thanks for the call. We'll go next to Barb in Heartland. Barb, hi.
Hi. I think this is a ploy. I think this is just partisan tricks again. If we allow this to, if the world, if this country allows this to happen, it's just another indication of the decay of our democracy. Allowing these people to do this, these congressional leaders, I don't know what's going on with the people in this country that they can't understand. These people are crazy, and this guy is crazy in office. We got to stop it.
Barb, thanks for the call. Even if this doesn't go anywhere, Dan, even if an impeachment didn't do anything, it didn't even get voted on, is it part of, you think, a PR war, as Barb is suggesting, trying to take some of the heat off the Trump administration?
Yeah, maybe that, or maybe even floating the idea as sort of a trial balloon, because remember, Trump himself has openly mused about firing Rosenstein. I mean, he tweeted about it. He said maybe he should go. If there is some support for the idea, that is, if the Freedom Caucus can float the idea and then it gains grassroots support and it becomes something that there's a lot of backing behind from the Republican base, that would maybe enable Trump to do it on his own. I mean, he doesn't need the Freedom Caucus to do this. He could fire Rosenstein pretty much any time. The problem, though, of course, like I just said, is that would be probably the most controversial thing he has ever done in his presidency, and it would, I think, turn a lot of people in his party potentially against him.
Thanks for that call, Barb. We go next to James with us in Fall Creek. James, hi.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I think the media, as well as Rosenstein and Mueller and the whole body, is missing is the bias of the announcement that Trump was going to Russia. Certainly the president was briefed before, 2 days before, but the indictment itself will never result in people going to court because these are people in Russia. And why that announcement or why that announcement had to be made in just before he leaves for a trip, 2 days, there is so much bias there that the media surely must recognize it.
James, thanks for the call. Dan, James questioning the timing of these indictments against these Russian military intelligence officials right before the president meets with the Russian president.
Well, yeah, there was some reporting and some thought that the timing of that was intended to put pressure on Trump, but there has been some subsequent reporting and statements from the White House saying that Trump actually was briefed on that before he left and gave the okay for them to put out those statements. And I'll push back on another thing. There have been a lot of indictments against people who are in Russia who will never see justice in this country for those things because they're not going to be extradited. But there has been one arrest here, Maria Butina, who is in prison as we speak and awaiting a trial, that there is it's seemingly some concrete accountability there. Of course, let's not forget there are several people who were associated with the Trump campaign, most notably Paul Manafort, who have also been brought up on charges stemming from the Mueller probe.
James, thanks for calling in. We're talking to Dan Neuhauser with the National Journal. It's our weekly roundup of national politics. Want to move on to another issue or two before we run out of time, Dan. This one with the Wisconsin connection, the idea of a vote in Congress to abolish ICE, Immigration and Customs Enforcement. Wisconsin Congressman Mark Pocan had introduced a bill that would abolish it. House Republicans are scrapping a plan to bring that to the floor for a vote. Give us some background on that.
So actually, this is very timely because they just voted on this about 15 minutes ago. Not this bill, but what they did is they scaled it back to a resolution in support of ICE. So at first, the abolish ICE idea has become very resonant on the left, on the progressive left, as a response to some of the horrific treatment of immigrants that we've been seeing coming out in news stories. A lot of the progressive left and members of Congress here, too, have been saying, well, we need to scrap ICE altogether. Now, Republicans said, if that's how you feel, why don't we test how popular that theory is in your caucus? And so what they had planned to do, what they wanted to do, was bring it to the floor for a vote put Democrats on the record. Republicans think this is actually a political winner for them. Because it seems too extreme for most Americans, for independent voters, the kinds of voters that you need to vote for you beyond just your party base. That plan was ultimately scrapped because Democrats indicated that they were going to encourage their members to vote neither yes or no. You could just vote present, essentially saying, yes, I'm here, but I'm not taking a position on this. And Democrats, including Mark Pocan, said, well, that's what we're going to do because we're not going to let Republicans dictate to us how and when we vote on our bills, and we're not going to indulge them in a vote that's just a messaging vote. So instead, today, Republicans brought up a resolution supporting ICE, and most Democrats did vote present, but a lot of them didn't. In fact, there were about a dozen or so Democrats who voted against the measure, indicating that they do not support ICE. Mark Pocan was not one of them. And then there were, that was about maybe two dozen members who voted against it, and about a dozen who voted for it, 18 to be exact. One of them, a Wisconsinite, Ron Kind, who's a pretty moderate Democrat. So even there in your Wisconsin delegation, you can see a split with Mark Pocan being with the Abolish ICE movement against ICE, but also with House leadership in saying, you know, we're not going to let Democrats pin us in a corner on this. And then Ron Kind, saying that he supports ICE, but that and even if this bill comes to the floor on Republicans' terms, he's going to vote to support ICE.
And I want to turn to the Farm Bill. Slowly, this huge piece of legislation slowly making its way through Congress. Versions have passed, I understand, in the House and the Senate. But now those are two different versions. They need to be reconciled. Where are we on that?
So they just voted as well to go to conference here in the House. So we're expecting that's not going to happen next week, and then there's a break for all of August. So September is going to be a busy month where they have a lot of spending bills to take care of, and the Farm Bill needs to be done by the end of that month too. The two biggest issues that I'm keeping an eye on are, of course, the expanded work requirements that Republicans have included in the House bill, which are not in the Senate bill, and which Democrats vehemently oppose. There are already work requirements for people who are getting food stamps, supplemental nutrition assistance, but this would deepen the requirements, basically allowing, you know, states can go further up to 30 hours a week of work or training programs, and this would federally mandate that anybody, for workers up to 60 years old, to have to prove every month that they worked or participated in a work program for at least 20 hours a week or qualified for an exemption. So Democrats think that would just take some of these the food stamps out of the mouths of children who are the children of some of these people who would be subject to these work requirements. And so they're not going to go for that. And of course, this bill would need 60 votes in the Senate to pass. So that's really going to be an issue. The final issue I'll say that I'm keeping an eye on is a bill, an amendment that is in the Senate version of the bill that would essentially limit the amount of subsidies that certain farms can get. That's not in the House bill. And even House Republican Agriculture Chairman Mike Conaway says he's not for it because this is a bad time with all the tariffs going on and with farmers already struggling, weather and other things that taking subsidies away from farmers, this is not a good time to do it.
Dan, we'll leave it there. Thanks a lot for joining us today.
Anytime. Thank you.
Daniel Neuhauser is a correspondent for the National Journal. He was with us for our weekly checkup on the top news in national politics.